Someday we'll just play the music and we'll just do a few sentences in between all the great songs. Maggie Lippe, thank you. I am on the phone with Emma Perez, the chair of ethnic studies at University of Colorado at Boulder. Emma, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am. Is this Eric?
This is Eric Mann, one of the co-hosts, and I'm also with Manuel Criollo, my co-host.
Very good.
What we're about to talk about is the... You know, you want to be careful not to use stereotypes, but the McCarthyite attack,
it's not necessarily a stereotype.
That's right. What if life is a stereotype, right? What if racism is a stereotype, right? We didn't make it.
Precisely.
So, very quickly, I'll just frame it and you just tell us a lot of the facts, and then we want to know how the movement's going. There's a professor named Ward Churchill, who many of our listeners know, Native American professor who was very active, was the former chair of ethnic studies, has written a ton of great books, and I don't know the name of the book that's brought him back to the being lynched, but what was the name of his latest book?
Ward has about 20 books. This one is about roosters coming home. What is it?
No, it's the chickens coming home to
yes,
roost,
chickens
right?
Chickens coming home to roost, yes.
And it's funny because I sent Ward an email on this that I've used. I mean, the concept of the chickens. Here's the specific what's going on, folks. A very radical professor at the University of Colorado at Boulder is now being threatened by being fired by the governor for very inflammatory and very important remarks he made about September 11th and a different way of looking at it, which Emma can talk about and I can talk about. As a result, he's resigned from the chairmanship of the Ethnic Studies Department, and Emma, you've taken over, is that
mm-hmm.
correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And now there's a 30-day, essentially, Spanish Inquisition where they're going over every single thing
yes.
that he's ever written, said, done,
yes.
with the goal of trying to deny him tenure, led by a right-wing governor of...
We'll take away his tenure. He's already got tenure.
Right, I'm sorry. To take yes. away his tenure, which would essentially be tantamount to getting him fired.
Precisely.
So why don't you tell us, it's great to have you on, why don't you tell us a few more facts first to just frame the story, mm-hmm. talk about the role that the faculty and students are playing, and just how you're understanding it and how our listeners can understand it.
Well, let's see, it all started with Ward is incredibly active in the community of Denver and Boulder and Colorado with the trying to put an end to the Columbus Day Parade. And recently, I believe it was the last Columbus Day Parade in October, he and a number of students and faculty were arrested. And as a result of that, for blocking the parade. And he won. Then they went to court. He was able to win the case in the court. And I think that there were some people in Denver who were actually quite angry about that. So many of us believe that it really does go back to that kind of activism and targeting Ward. That's only some of the background for Denver. Now, as you know, Hamilton College had invited him in upstate, I believe it's in upstate New York.
Yes, it is.
Invited him to give a talk on a panel with some other people, and he was going to go talk about Native American genocide. It so happened that someone at Hamilton was looking through the web and found an essay that he posted the day after 9/11, which, you know, many people post lots of things on the web. They're not necessarily scholarly research, but they are often op-ed pieces. And I think what's interesting about Ward is that people forget he has a journalist background, communications background. So anyway, he published that, and they found the little Eichmann's remark, and so as a result of that, it escalated in Hamilton. To their credit, the Hamilton president said he has a right to freedom of speech, and we are not going to go back on the invitation. And they didn't. Finally, the day before he was supposed to leave, what ended up happening is that they were forced to disinvite because because they were worried about security. So Ward, I was actually kind of pleased that they didn't go, because this was right around, let's see, January 31st was when he resigned. And that was, I think it was that same week, and the horrific emails, phone messages, students who are in support of us, of ethnic studies or in ethnic studies, they all received, we all began receiving these horrific emails from a bunch of, and messages from people out there who were, of course, insulted with the little Eichmann's remark and not seeing it for the simile that it is. We have a very literal society, clearly. Not the entire society, I'm not going to say that, but some people are very literal.
Emma, why don't you, I know about it, why don't you elaborate what the little Eichmann remark was?
Basically what Ward says in his essay, and then it goes back to the book. I mean, he posted this essay, which were his remarks about, or rather his op-ed piece, but then he part of that, those same opinions, he ended up publishing in his book. And what he says is that the technocrats, the higher level officials who ended up dying at the Twin Towers, were not necessarily innocent, because they are also involved in this in international commerce and international decisions about the world. And he used the term little Eichmanns. And so Ward is also quite a controversial person, and he sort of, I think there is a way in which he knows how to provoke people into listening. Now, keep in mind, this was written 3 years ago. Just now, at this moment in 2005, are people noticing it? So the book and the article have been sitting around for 3 years before there is this big upheaval about it. So, and he also has made it very clear after that, because he's been asked a number of times in interviews and speeches around here, that he never meant any of the families. He never meant the firefighters. He never meant families of those firefighters. He never meant the people, the service workers, or the regular people who were working at the Twin Towers. He was talking about an elite core of technocrats. So that people are basically misinterpreting that and misquoting that, and they prefer to see that, or they prefer to misconstrue and misinterpret, because it makes it much easier to have a scapegoat around this issue.
Well, I mean, Emma, I think that the thing that I wrote, and not that that's important, but I wrote in my email to him, which the FBI can check if they want, but the question of, on September 11th, there was a sort of a hidden left sentiment that was very hard to come out and say, which was, look, we do feel bad. You know, none of us are celebrating, but none of us are either shocked, and nor do we think that there's nothing that could possibly cause someone in the world to do this. And that before we looked at, since I had just come back from the World Conference Against Racism and flown in on about September 7th or 8th or 9th, and I was consumed by the concept of the trans-African slave trade, consumed by what the United States was doing in Palestine, which were the two issues, consumed by the U.S. walkout at that time.
Yeah.
And I was in South Africa. I wrote a book called Dispatches from Durban, in which I saw still millions of people dying of AIDS without any U.S. help, millions of people living on $2 a day, starving to death, even in South Africa with a progressive government.
Mm-hmm.
And so what did we expect, essentially, right?
And the that was the question Ward was asking.
Right.
How can you throw up your hands and say, how can they not like us? And he addresses in his book, and he says, look at how many Iraqi babies that this country murdered, basically killed, and just called collateral damage. And we're killing their babies, and we're wondering why there is this kind of retaliation. And I think that there is a way in which this country, or certainly not everyone, but there are enough people in power these days refuses to see, to look at history, refuses to see the manner in which the United States is, has blood on its hands. And we've had blood on our hands for centuries, going back to Native American genocide.
Exactly.
And that was the founding of this country. It was founded on Native American genocide.
Well, first of all, thank you. As you know, academics are not exactly our favorite group in terms of the movement, because they don't normally talk like you. You know, they don't. They would usually start by distancing themselves from Ward. You know, the classic.
Ward is a good friend. I love him and I support him, and he knows that I do. And I get very tired of people maligning him because they had some. Because he did something to them 10 years ago.
Well, good for you, and this is a great... So let's talk about, since you, you know, not only is Ward not the typical faculty person, but neither are you.
Mm-hmm.
We're unfortunate, if only you were.
Well, given that I'm a Chicana lesbian, believe me, I'm not.
Right, except for that, right. Now, and with great left politics, so the question is, I know that they're trying to work to build a very broad united front, and obviously Chicana lesbians and Native American revolutionaries are not going to be sufficient, although they can be the leadership of this united front.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about the effort to win a civil liberties fight or even a faculty rights fight.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the, really quickly, where's the governor at? Where's the chancellor at? Where's the president at? I know that you've taken a, did the ad come out today, the full page
ad? Yes, the ad did come out today. The Arts and Sciences passed a resolution as early as February 10th. In fact, I was in that meeting. And then after that, we generated or initiated a meeting with as many faculty as possible and asked them and, you know, discussed the issue about a week or two later and said, look, we really have to move on this to stop the investigation. And the whole point of that is that the investigation basically violates the moral principles of the university itself. So we've managed to collect 200 faculty signatures. There are many, you know, and it, you can look at that in one way or the other and say, well, isn't that sad that that's all they can collect? I think at a time, given the political climate and given the fact that we're only now starting, as the left, starting to mobilize again, that's really quite remarkable, and I'm really quite pleased with how many people are up in arms about this. I'd like to be more positive about our successes. But I think also where things are moving is that the interim chancellor is still, he should be making a decision by the 7th, but there, I've heard rumors today, I don't know how true it is, but that he's saying that they may not be finished by then, it may be up until the 15th. The governor still wants him fired, the legislature continues to try to raise, have resolutions to try to get him fired. Now, keep in mind that University of Colorado only receives 7% of our budget from the state now. That's it, just 7%. So it's quite remarkable to me that they can still have so much, have so much power here. So we're waiting. We're not just waiting. One of the things that we're doing is with the petition that we're sending, was sent around by the faculty and the resolution is that we want to stop the investigation. There are also friends, academic friends throughout the nation. Carlos Munoz, for example, who's up at Berkeley, and David Pello, who's at UC San Diego, both have started a petition for professors around the nation to sign for us. So we've been very fortunate in having allies across at different universities who also belong to ethnic studies or some kind of area studies like women's studies or African American, any of the area studies, because what we really see happening as well is that it's not just Ward they're going after. They're really going after the content here, and they're going after the kinds of classes that these area studies have. And, you know, already ethnic studies is being maligned. Already they've been, you know, we've been getting phone calls about requesting, different news stations requesting our curriculum vitae and wanting to know if indeed we have legitimate degrees. So that kind of harassment is ongoing, but I think that I also like to focus on the fact that there is so much support from my colleagues as well. So we're continuing with the good fight. We don't know how long this will go on.
Well, I think, Emma, that one of the things that, as you've expressed, is mm-hmm. I think we have to take this as an opportunity.
Yeah.
In 1965, when I was organizing in Newark, New Jersey against the war, a professor named Eugene Genovese made a statement, "I do not fear a Viet Cong victory, I welcome it."
Yeah.
And he was at Rutgers.
I remember Genovese, yeah.
Right, he was at Rutgers, and he was a slave, an anti-slavery
yeah.
historian.
Yeah.
And they went after his job, and all these imperialist
yeah.
hypocrites, you know, from caring about Janet Jackson's breast to,
you know,
whatever, these, you know, adulterers and murderers, mm-hmm. you know. I think the issue of hypocrisy needs
okay.
to be, you know, really raised in a very big okay. way. But all of a sudden, so I think that you're at the cutting edge of a very, very important struggle. And as you say, it has to do with ethnic studies. It has to do with freedom
mm-hmm.
of intellect at the university.
Precisely. It does. And it goes back further. I don't know if you're familiar with the American Council of Trustees and Alumni, but I would urge you and as many of your listeners to look them up on the web. And they're www.goacta.com, A-C-T-A. And they are a very, very well-organized group of probably moderately conservative to more conservative. Governor Owen is a part of that, and they're basically a group of governors, legislators. They also bring in regents, and they are they're some of the first ones who started the Academic Bill of Rights, I think, or who began. No, that was Horowitz, but they were.
Well, listen, Emma, we're going to have to tie it up.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question. Are you free next Monday to do the part two on this?
Next Monday.
We'll work it out, okay?
Okay.
Because the main goal is we'd like to keep this. I think this is a really front page story for Voices from the Front Lines. And
okay.
we'd like to keep it on our show every Monday for a while and follow one story
okay.
and see how we do. So I'm going to have to say goodbye to you now with great respect, and we'll be in touch with you soon.
Thank you so much, and you take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
So we want to take today's guests, Jeremy LaHood, Sherrod Chadwick, and Emma Perez. Today we had music from Tambu International Ensemble, Gran Silencio, Silvia Rodriguez, and Tower of Power. We'd like to thank our producer, Alan Minsky, and our engineer, Maggie LaPique. This is Manuel Criollo, and I'm with Eric Mann. And stay tuned for Beneath the Surface with Susie Wiseman.
You've been listening to the 4 o'clock report, Voices from the Frontline edition, heard Monday afternoons from 4 to 5 on listener-supported KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and at kpfk.org across the globe. Stay tuned for Beneath the Surface with Susie Wiseman. It's coming up next.